There are very few men in the jazz world or any world who can proudly say, of course this man wouldn't say it of himself, but we all know it, that they're a legend in their own time. We have one of those men with us right now. We can't have Bunny, we can't have Bix, but we've got a man just as big, or even bigger. The man who rocked the cradle of American jazz, the man who wrote the jazz story himself. The great, the one, the only Louis Armstrong. For a youngster of my age to say how it feels to be on the same stage with a man who, to him, perhaps represents jazz more in one single figure than anybody else. And you've heard a lot of praise in your time, but you just go on, don't let it stop you. In your simple, eloquent, warm way, you play and sing jazz in the way that's been copied and admired all over the world.
Gee, that's swell, Pops. I appreciate that. That's awful nice. You know, it's just my life, but it's like to blow this thing. I love this thing.
Well, it's the spirit of America and all the things you could see in that horn when you were a youngster in New Orleans that has brought you as far as it has. I imagine you were pretty proud recently when you saw the picture New Orleans, which, of course, sort of glorifies all that you've done in jazz.
Well, I saw a lot of the rushes. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it since the, you know,
the full
took
picture?
It took it from the cutting room floor yet. I don't know what's in it yet. I haven't seen it. But to tell me it's going to be all right.
Well, as long as there's enough of Louis in it, we'll all be very happy indeed.
Well, I think you'll enjoy the part that you see that, you know, knocks me out. I know.
Louis, it's seldom we have a chance to talk to you, so I want to ask you just one or two questions. Do you remember the first professional job you had back in New Orleans?
Way back then?
Way back.
Yes, sir. That's way back. That's,
oh, it's just yesterday, Louis.
Well, it seems like yesterday. I think I was... dubbing for King Oliver that night there. And he sent me this place, and Pete Lawler, the owner of the place, he asked me, say, what are you doing here, boy? I said, well, Mr. Oliver sent me here. He said, well, you just go on home. We'll pay you right over and tell Joe Oliver I'll see him tomorrow night.
Did he? Did he, Louis?
Yeah.
He did?
That was a good deal.
Well, you got paid.
That's what I went there for most of the time.
Why not? Louis, have you been back to New Orleans in the years? Sid Catlett's roaring outside. Have you been back to New Orleans in the recent years and gone down the streets that you used to play on and sort of felt sad that they weren't still as lively as they used to be?
Well, I still get a kick out of those brass bands down there. They swing just like a 12-piece orchestra, you know.
I said something to Edmund Hall a while ago about there being a New Orleans-style clarinet playing. There may not be in clarinet, but would you say there is in trumpet? Do you feel that... You sort of are still playing the music of a city that was the sort of cradle of jazz when you play your horn?
Well, I always keep that thought in mind, no matter where I'm playing. I always keep New Orleans, you know, the kind of essence of New Orleans every time I play.
One of the things we're very proud of about American jazz is that it is exactly that. It's something particularly and very distinctively American. When was the first time you played your horn in Europe for Europeans?
1932.
I understand they received you beautifully over there.
Well, it was swell. Just throwing cards and papers all in there and hollering bravo and everything else.
Well, you were one of our most potent ambassadors, even during the war years when they weren't allowed to hear other forms of American entertainment. They used to smuggle the jazz records in underground, and of course Louis Armstrong was a very definite ambassador for American goodwill in those years. But I don't know why we're talking so much, Louis.
It's all right. I enjoy it.